Hello, what a show we have today. We conclude, no, we take a rocket ship to the moon for the end of Convictions Week as Dalton Del Don joins me to share his hottest takes this draft season. I do my best to heat check him. Sunscreen is required for this podcast. We also talk Jahan Dotson trade, Jaden Daniels fantasy outlook, and answer your mailbag questions, and have a special Taysom Hill announcement. Oh boy, no time to waste. Let's go. Hello, it is Friday, August 23rd. I am Andy Behrens. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, official automotive partner of the NFL. Hell of a day to talk ball, as our good friend Matt Hartman would say. Joining me to talk a little ball, it's Dalton Del Don. Dalton, they have not allowed the two of us together alone on a pod in quite a while, so I'm pretty excited for this. How are you?
Andy, it's been too long since I've had the pleasure of talking ball with you. How's it going? You've been traveling the world, watching the Olympics. I've been jealous. Nice of you to return and talk to the little people like myself.
First of all, like, man, I won't lie. The Olympics were awesome. That's an experience that I hope everybody gets a chance to have. That was really cool. It's a great way to see a city. Great way to experience, I don't know, like the French fans. They were awesome. That whole experience was awesome. Don't regret it. Cost a fortune, but what a time. To be here with you during Convictions Week. There's really no place I'd rather be, and there's no pod that I would prefer to be on aside from this one. I can't wait to get into it. But before we jump into what I think is actually going to be the finest, like what a perfect capstone to Convictions Week. But before we get into that, we actually have like for a random Thursday, August, we have some news. We have some pretty interesting news. We got a trade. Here are the details on this trade. A trade within a division. This is kind of wild to me. So the Commanders deal Jahan Dotson to division rival Philadelphia. And it's not just Dotson. It's Dotson and a fifth round pick for a third round pick and 2 7s. So not really a huge pick swap, honestly. Third for a fifth, basically. They give up Dotson, who I'll remind people was a former first round pick. That's wild. So we have, you know, and like I've been an apologist for Dotson. Like I like him. His rookie year really happened. Like he had some real flashes in his first season. I realized that last year was a disappointment, but now we're looking at a player who, you know, Washington's had him in the building for a couple years, and they just decided to kick him to the curb, basically, and not just kick him to the curb, but kick him to the curb within their own division, giving him to a team that is, you know, the I don't know if they're the odds on favorite in the division. They're certainly one of them. They're just in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. So this is a big giveaway for them. Talk to me about this deal on either side. You can take it whichever way you want to go. I will just say that for managers who've already drafted, you got Jahan Dotson on a roster. I think he's a drop. I think whatever you were hoping that you might get from him in a, you know, imagined scenario where he's the number two receiver in Washington, that's out the window. There's no way he's challenging AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert. Like there's plenty of mouths to feed in Philadelphia. I don't think Jahan Dotson is going to be a particularly fantasy relevant player, but feel free to disagree with that if you like.
First of all, I think it's just a silly notion that you're not supposed to trade within your own division. I'd argue the opposite is true. You want to match your trade partner with a team that has opposite timelines as you. So it's even better that the Eagles are trading for, you know, costing their future. So when the Commanders are ready to contend, the team within their division will have less draft capital. So I think it actually makes more sense in some cases. This trade does not move the needle for me in fantasy. I already had Dotson as like my wide receiver 72. I know Harmon had kept the light on for him, and there was a lot of he was getting a lot of looks in the slot in the preseason, but he also wasn't playing in two wide receiver sets. Badly outplayed by Curtis Samuel last year. Certainly going to have to fight for targets now in Philadelphia. It's a condensed offense. I mean, Goddard was already, you know, looking for a bigger role, and they added Barkley in the offseason. So yeah, Dotson to me loses fantasy value despite improving his offensive systems. Washington, I mean, McLaurin maybe going to get the full RPO treatment now, bump him up a little. McCaffrey eventually may come into to play here. Zach Ertz is just the ugliest fantasy sleeper right now. I know we all like Ben Sinnett, but Ertz under Kingsbury was a top 10 fantasy tight end last we saw him. He's going to be the starter week one. He's going to be a cheap DFS play. I know no one wants to hear that, and eventually Sinnett will be the man, but Ertz will get the looks early
That's
on.
That's such a good call, by the way. It's one of those situations where everybody's looking to the rookie, and it's going to be the boring old vet who, you know, has given us the same season year after year, who is definitely the early season guy to target.
And finally, Washington. I just hope, Andy, this is not a precursor to them moving after Ayuk. I mean, there are room worries of this, like, is this clearing the deck for an Ayuk move? Because there's still no movement there in Niners. So that is my only concern here, personally, is hopefully this doesn't lead to an Ayuk trade.
Oh, you beat me to it. I was going to hammer you over the head with the possibility of an Ayuk trade, and this was just draft capital being acquired toward that goal. So, yeah, it's as we speak, that is still a possibility. But you're so right to point out that trading like within a conference, like regardless of sport, this is true in baseball, this is true in the NBA, this is true everywhere. Like the idea that you can't trade with a division rival, with a longtime rival, something like that. Like if you see, I mean, you have to maximize the pool of players that are available to you in any trade negotiation. You have to maximize the return. And sometimes that's going to involve perhaps making a rival a little bit better in the short term to help your own long-term goals. So that's a great point by you. Yeah, it's funny that you already had Dotson in the place that basically I just lowered him to. Like I just dropped him to like wide receiver 76, something like that. You were already there. So I can't even imagine what you're doing with Dotson now, but he's basically unplayable now in Philly, right?
Yeah, he's going to be undraftable, especially. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Maybe he returns to how he showed as a rookie, but to me, there's just too many hurdles for him to clear now.
Yeah, fully agree. I think we're on the same page here. So that brings us to, oh man, I've been looking forward to this for a couple of days since I realized that I would get to be on this podcast with you. We are going to conclude convictions. I mean, conclude is the wrong verb here. All of Convictions Week has built toward this moment. This is what the people want. This is sure as hell what I want. We are going to get some scorching thermonuclear, like radioactive hot takes from Dalton Del Don. Nobody does it quite like him. Nobody, like, you're one of those rankers where, like, if you're all in on a player, we can see it in the ranks. There's no hedging. And when you're all in on a player, you are, you know, you don't waffle. Like you bang the table, and you bang it loudly. And it shows up in your ranks. It shows up in all of your work. Like, I really admire it. It's great. I can't wait to do this. If there's anything basically that is hotter than the month of August, it is the takes from Dalton Del Don. So really looking forward to this. You have been asked, and I listen. One thing that I told the producers was there's no way that I would attempt to go hot take for hot take with you. That's just asking for trouble. I can't do it. I don't feel as deeply about anything in my life as you do, your hottest takes in the NFL. So that's where we are. I'm just going to sit back and react as you give us like the most wild ass things that pop into your head about fantasy football in 2024. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready, Andy. I like to undersell, over deliver, but you're breaking the no hype rule here, man. You're setting me up here for a better come with it. So, are you ready, Andy?
I'm gonna get ready. I brought some protective gear. Slipping the glasses on.
Oh man,
I got the pot holders here. I'm ready. Give it to me. Bring it on. What's your first hot take, Dalton Del Don?
All right. Well, I've moved Breece Hall to my number one overall player. And this is a good one to start with because I want to make it clear here that I am not making these takes just to be a hot taker or to rank to look at me. I had a number one pick in a high stakes draft over the weekend. And, I really thought about it. I'm a Niners fan. You know, McCaffrey is why am I going to pass on him? But really looking into it, and we're drafting for 2024, not last year's stats. I went with Breece Hall in my number one pick. So therefore, I went and I made my ranking changes after I did this. So it's not even like, oh, look at me, my ranking. I realized if I'm going to do this personally, I better reflect that to my readers. Yeah. So I did the change there. And Breece Hall from weeks after weeks, so from weeks 5 through 18, that's not an arbitrary end date because he had his snap count limited weeks 1 through 4 returning from ACL surgery. Here are the points. I'll just use PPR. McCaffrey from weeks 5 through 18 averaged 22.6. Breece Hall averaged 20.0. Number two, right behind him. Hall had the worst quarterback ever. The Jets finished with the fewest yards per play in the NFL last year. They had one carry inside the five all year long to running backs. Breece Hall had 3.3 expected rushing touchdowns. Meanwhile, everything went right for my guy CMC, who's coming off a 420-touch season. Running backs historically have seen a 25% dip in baseline production during their eighth year in the league. That's my guy McCaffrey, who's entering with a calf injury. Meanwhile, third-year running backs see 121% increase in that production. This is when you want them. You want running backs in year 2 and 3 in the league. The Jets improved their offensive line. Yes, I worry about Aaron Rodgers' leg. Obviously, it's Achilles, but you know, four-time MVP winner replacing the worst QB situation. Hall leads the NFL in yards per carry after contact and yards per route run since entering the league. He had the most average, the most fantasy points when his team was leading last year, and the Jets are now favored in 14 of 17 games. I'd argue that Braylon Allen's emergence can be seen as a positive. You get his insurance pick in round 11, 12, his backup running back. So Breece Hall, I've moved to my number one player, and I hope McCaffrey has an awesome year. Don't get me wrong. And your guy, Bijan Robinson, I know you like him more than Hall. We've had an argument here. Beat reporters are saying that's going to be like a 50-50 split. They're saying Algier is going to get 14 carries to Bijan 16. I obviously don't worry about that, and I think Bijan's a top three player on my board. But Breece Hall is a top it.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot here that I want to get into. I'll just start with the bit on Bijan. I want people to understand in case they get their news from, I don't know, sloppy aggregators or something like that. Like that whole report on Tyler Algier, perhaps splitting touches evenly with Bijan Robinson is just like one guy being asked to speculate on what they think it's going to be. It wasn't like, I think even that reporter would say it wasn't reporting. That's not like from the coaching staff or anything like that. And there's plenty of good buzz on Bijan. He, you know, if the Jets quarterback situation was the worst in the NFL, then the Atlanta quarterback situation was like the second worst in the NFL. It was terrible, right? Right. They're both like escaping situations that were awful, and we think they're going to be in better situations. But I'll focus on Hall here because I will say I took the glasses off because I don't think this is your most scorching hot take, right? Like I think Hall is in this conversation, and I think it's a reasonable conversation with both CMC and Bijan. I'll just tell you, like, the one area where I think there's almost no chance Hall recovers, Hall actually performs at the level that he did last year. And I agree with you, like, they're going to get more goal line opportunities. Even if Aaron Rodgers loves to throw like 1 and 2 yard touchdown passes, there's still going to be plenty of goal line opportunities because they just barely visited the goal line last year. My concern, maybe it's not even a huge concern, it's just something that I think is going to get made up for in touchdown potential. But I really think like the remarkable receiving totals that we were seeing from Hall in the closing weeks of the season, that felt to me like that was purely a product of Trevor Siemian and Boyle. And, you know, they really only had Garrett Wilson as a playmaker in that offense. And I think that had a lot to do with who was quarterbacking the team and less to do with what they want that offense to be moving forward. Like, I don't think Aaron Rodgers is trying to feed the ball to Breece Hall through the air 12 times a game. Not that you're saying that. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I do think he probably gives up some reception potential. And of course, again, he trades it for like real goal line opportunities.
Rodgers is also really slow, you know, incredibly slow as far as play volume, but hopefully that counters with a big increase in efficiency there. I agree with you. I don't think Hall's going to lead all running backs in receptions again this year, but boy, he led all running backs in air yards as a rookie, even before, like, counting being injured. I believe he had first or second most air yards as a running back as a rookie, and Rodgers will do that. He'll throw to his backs downfield. So I just think some of that volume will be replaced by extra efficiency. And man, just getting some goal line looks, the easy touchdowns. I mean, it's just going to be massive for him. And again, McCaffrey, 400 plus touches and eighth year in the league, already injured. It's just important to remember we're not drafting off last year's stats. and to try to look ahead, you know, who's going to be the number one player next year? And we'll get to that with my, with the quarterback one coming up here next.
Yeah, the Jets are an absolutely loaded team. So I like this one. I admire this one. This is not,
I just want to say, well, one second, Andy. Mike Clay does the projections of every single roster. He goes like all the, you know, the every single offensive lineman, every single defensive lineman, everything. He has the Jets as the number one roster entering this year, right? Sure. Ahead of the Niners and Chiefs. I mean, if they're really the best team in the league now and he's the best running back, I mean, I don't know, man. This setup could be pretty sick. I hear you, though. This isn't overly scorching.
Yeah, no, that's not unreasonable, though. Like, that's a loaded defense. It's a loaded offense when everyone's healthy. That's a that's an incredible roster, certainly a Super Bowl contender. I don't think that is like the most outrageous take I've ever heard from a Dalton Del Don. And I assume what you're doing is building from one of your milder hot takes to some of your more extreme hot takes. So give me number two.
Well, let's get it over with. I wrote an article. Anthony Richardson is going to finish as the number one fantasy QB this year. He matched CJ Stroud in weekly top five finishes last year while finishing two games. He played 10 quarters. Yes, there's a sample size issue here, but man, if you did extrapolate it, he would have led all quarterbacks last year in rush yards, rush TDs. He would have scored 26 attempts at designed runs and all that good stuff. Fantasy points per dropback was Lamar Jackson historic levels. Shane Steichen created the tush push. Here, Andy. I mean, I expect them. The touchdown upside here is really through the roof. Steichen's a certified quarterback guru, just really helps his quarterbacks produce numbers. Colts are going to be playing indoors at a high pace. Indy averaged the fifth most plays per game last year during Richardson games. This is the right division. What if A.D. Mitchell is a star? I mean, he lasted the bottom of the second round for off-field reasons. What if he is an immediate star? Josh Downs, quietly, really, really good. And Michael Pittman there. I worry some about these the preseason. It sounds like they need, almost like in a way it's good, they're going to be forced to play fast. Like, he struggled as a passer. I get it. He's raw, man. I mean, I think Jaden Daniels threw more passes last year than Richardson attempted throughout his collegiate career. So I get it. We're making a leap of faith here. But you look at the underlying things like pressure to sack ratio, Richardson way better than Daniels. His YPA last year, limited sample, but pretty good. So I just think with question marks with Josh Allen, who's he going to be throwing to there? And Hurts and Allen, I admit I'm the underdog there. I mean, after Brady took over as OC, Allen ran like crazy. They have a small sample. I get it. I'm the underdog there. But all these other guys, you know, Lamar Jackson, quarterbacks who don't run like Mahomes and Stroud, I would happily bet anyone, you know, on a per game basis, Richardson's going to outscore them in fantasy this year.
Well, no one's going to bet against Anthony Richardson on a per game basis. He's the per game.
So it's just 100% down to a bet on health. Then that's what we're talking here, right? So that you just said it. No one's going to bet against that. So all I'm just okay. All right.
Well, I have two points here, and I'm not going to push back too strong because I've got him. You know, I might be the low man on Anthony Richardson. If not in the industry, maybe at Yahoo, I've got him like QB6. Like, I think there's incredible potential, and I think he's within that. I think he's definitely within that group of quarterbacks who has QB1 overall within his range of outcomes. I don't think that's crazy. I'm in a very slow moving draft right now, a super flex league in which Lawrence Jackson, Roto-World, took him number one overall. Like, so you're not even on Anthony Richardson Island here. If you are, there are other people with you. Like, this isn't, again, not your craziest take. We've seen stuff like this happen before. Here are my two questions for you. Number one, this is more of a Colts issue. If you legitimately see Anthony Richardson as somebody who, again, assuming 16, 17 games, can actually score, you know, like Jalen Hurts last year, 14, 15, 16 touchdowns. If you see him that way, what has that done to your Jonathan Taylor rank? And then number two, There was a quarterback that I don't think you mentioned in all of your talking about Jaden Daniels and all the other rushing quarterbacks. Like, why isn't Kyler Murray this guy? Like, where are you at on Kyler Murray? Because Kyler Murray has similar rushing upside, probably not going to get as many designed runs on the goal line necessarily, but we've already seen him finish as the QB3. He's got a better receiving core than he's ever had. Like, where are you at on Murray if you're this high on Richardson?
So I'm still okay with Taylor. Taylor's my RB4, and I acknowledge he could be the guy stealing touchdowns from Richardson, but that's a top five, if not top three offensive line. So both can be good. Yeah. I think Taylor being a good football player is going to help that offense. It's going to help them score points. It's a good thing for Richardson and a good thing for Taylor. He'll open up running lanes, even if Richardson's stealing the short touchdowns. Jonathan Taylor's capable of scoring from far away. And Kyler Murray's my QB5, Andy. I'm going to talk about him later. Okay. I have him ranked ahead of Patrick Mahomes. You just want these running guys. And that's my strategy this year, is targeting Richardson, because you don't have to take him as a QB1. He goes in five and round six in most drafts. And if I miss out on him, I'm going after Kyler Murray. And if I miss out on him, I'm going after Jaden Daniels. And if I really miss out on him, then I'll go after a guy, Caleb Williams, or my guy, Brock Purdy. Obviously not the same running upside there, but quarterback's never been deeper. And ironically, Anthony Richardson becomes a shakier pick in Superflex, because the replacement value becomes so much different. And our biggest concern with him is injuries. So it's weirdly like he's like a better pick actually in single QB leagues, but with you on Murray, man. He's my QB5 ahead of Mahomes. Yes, these running quarterbacks are the cheat code. I know it's boring to talk about, but it's just simply math. It's just math. It's just easier to score the points when you run.
This is a really good point about Richardson actually being a little bit riskier in Superflex, because, and I feel like I've talked about this a few times within the last week, quarterback is the position to take big swings. You know, if you're wrong about Anthony Richardson, there's such a safety net. Almost everybody is playing in a one quarterback league. And in that sort of situation, just think about the guys that were available to you last year. You didn't have to draft CJ Stroud. You didn't have to draft Jordan Love. Like, they became available, and that was fine. Like, that was your plan B. If you took Richardson last year and you whiffed on him, didn't really matter. There were alternatives, and that is going to be the case if you play in a one quarterback league. Okay, give me hot take number three.
Okay, I'm all in on Devon Achane. Obviously, we're dealing with an injury theme here.
I'm
going
to have to put the glasses on for this one. I bet this is going to get spicy.
We're dealing with an injury theme here, but I want it to be noted that every running back in the NFL is projected to play around like 13.6 games this season. Yep. I mean, everyone gets injured. Everyone is an injury risk. We need to understand that. So I love Achane. I have him ranked ahead of Saquon Barkley and Kyren Williams. He goes definitely after them in Yahoo leagues. All we need is a 45% snap share here. I mean, he's the best fantasy scorer of all time through his first 130 touches. His healthy full season pace last year was more than 1,500 yards from scrimmage and 17 touchdowns, while sharing the backfield with a running back who led the NFL in rushing touchdowns. And that Raheem Mostert is 32 years old. Achane averaged 115 yards from scrimmage when playing 40% of the snaps. And here's where it gets really interesting. He had the same number of first read targets as Rashad White over just 9 games as a rookie. There's really legit receiving upside here. He's been lining up out wide a little in preseason. Don't want to get too concerned with that. I just think as a receiver, there's big upside here. He's bulked up. Miami scored more than 50 fantasy points from their backfield than any team has in years last season. Kyren Williams is 5'9", 194 pound fifth rounder who's missed more than 35% of the game since he's been getting drafted, and they added Blake Corum. Saquon Barkley has really concerning decline in his statistics. Look, the avoided tackle rate, the broken tackle percentage, the EPA per target. He's been second to last 2 years. Yes, he's been in a bad environment, but now he has a quarterback who's going to take all the rushing scores. So give me Achane. Even if he misses 3 or 4 games, there's no player in the league more likely to help you win your week when he is available.
Yeah, so a couple things on Achane, and I find it very difficult. He's one of those cases where it's just really difficult to express what you think of as the full range of outcomes for players like this when you're asked to just, you know, slot him in somewhere in your running back ranks, right? Like
100%.
There's no question that, you know, his 99th percentile outcome is RB1. He stays healthy. He plays, like, let's give him 16 games, and let's just say he's seeing, you know, 16 to 18 touches per week. I don't think he's going to average close to 8 yards per carry or whatever it was last year. It was something absolutely ridiculous. Nobody's going to do that over a full season. He's not going to catch anybody sleeping this year. Like, it's not going to be like that. But at greater volume, you know, it could be an extraordinary season. It could be like a close to the, you know, league leader in scrimmage yards, huge touchdown total. I get all that. It's not just Mostert, though. It's Jalen Wright, who's a really good player and a proven player. And like everybody else on the Dolphins, like a 4.3 guy, right? Incredible speed. So I there's some sort of rotation here. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like. I agree with you that if Achane actually comes in around 45%, that's going to be a win for fantasy. That's going to be a huge win for fantasy. So just, I guess, talk a little bit about, also, by the way, there's no world in which I wouldn't take Achane ahead of Rashad White. I don't even think those are comparable players. They're barely even, like, you know, as athletes, they're just, it's just not even close.
I was just pointing that out because White got all his fantasy stats from as a receiver.
Yeah.
And we're talking first read targets as a rookie. He had more in 9 games than White had all season.
Yeah.
And that's where he got all his stats. That reveals some upside as a receiver right there for all McDaniel's been talking about is that he's going to grow this off. His role is going to grow this year. So I don't know. I understand he can't take 20 touches a game. We're looking 250 touches might be a stretch here, but I think Jalen Wright is a plus, a guy you can get his insurance now. We know some we can get in round 11. I love Mostert as a Niner guy, you know, and I understand that his career mileage is lower than most because of his unique career. But this guy had never had 200 carries until recently, and he's 32, which is just ancient for a receiver. I mean, sorry, for running back. So I see the path here for Achane in such an awesome offense.
So this for you is a simple case of what does it look like if everything goes right? Correct. Like, and that's a hard thing to say when you're talking about like a second round pick, third round pick. But
not
like,
necessarily, because I'm saying I think he's worth drafting in the middle of the second round. I would personally take him in a PPR league, even if baking in 3 or 4 missed games. Jahmyr Gibbs is going at the back end of the first before the injury. And do you realize that Achane averaged 1.1 more opportunities than Gibbs with Montgomery last year? I mean,
yeah.
Why is Gibbs go round 2 rounds ahead of Achane when they're the same? They're looking at the same amount of opportunities, I guess, because he didn't suffer as many injuries last year. I guess that is the reason. Okay. But man, Montgomery to me is a less of a threat to get injured this year than Mostert.
Yeah. Yeah. No, David Montgomery is a real problem. And it's funny. I was just thinking about that. Montgomery is one of those guys, and now we're way off topic, but that's one of those guys who's really come up in my ranks because I don't see any reason why they would do anything fundamentally differently in the backfield this year than they did last year, because it worked so spectacularly last year. Right. And Montgomery had all the goal line carries. So that's a Gibbs to Achane is an interesting comparison.
I just want to push back because no, I don't. I think we're baking in some stuff here as a third rounder. And I think his upside, a contingent upside, if Mostert goes down, he doesn't get hurt, then Achane's a top 5 upside. So no, I disagree with you. I think there's upside even to where he's going. Even guys like me taking him at the end of the second.
Oh no, I'm arguing Achane should be in the same conversation with Gibbs. I don't think there's huge separation there. Okay. Where I guess I would push back a little bit is like, what is the best Saquon Barkley season look like in your estimation versus what the best Devon Achane season looks like?
At this stage of his career, I mean, Barkley just looks nothing like he did as a rookie year. I mean, his targets have dropped 5 straight seasons. I mean, I get he's in a much better environment this year, but I think Achane's best season is markedly better than this version of Barkley's best season.
Okay, I'm going to need a moment to process this. We're going to take our first break. We'll be right back. All right, I've made my peace with your takes on Achane, on Richardson. I'm still processing a few things here, but I think I can live with it. Give me hot take number 4, Dalton.
All right. Cooper Kupp, I'm drafting ahead of teammate Puka Nacua. Kupp has been my wide receiver, is my wide receiver 9. I've actually had him as my wide receiver 10 for the last couple months. And then because of this Nacua injury, I decided to flip them. You won't need to draft that way. That's really not my main take here. My main take is to draft Cooper Kupp. I've been going after the younger guys, as you see. I'm also willing to go after a boring veteran. Receivers entering his stage of his career in the league typically don't see a major drop off. Obviously, injuries the last couple years are a concern, but Cooper Kupp on one leg last year matched Nacua in targets and target rate and all that. And do not look at his stats, his yards per out run, all that stuff. They were horrible last year. Yes, because he was playing injured. He was compromised. Yeah. He was not nearly the player he's going to be this year, theoretically. But all offseason, yes, he's back to 100%. McVay's basically the offense is running through Kupp again. It's such a condensed offense. Nacua and Kupp, even if Nacua does stay healthy, Nacua, by the way, ran more routes last year than he did throughout his entire college career. He dealt with a ton of injuries in college. Even if he stays healthy, I think Kupp can be top 10. We do need Stafford to stay healthy as well, but this is such a condensed offense. I mean, their number one tight ends, Parkinson. I just talked about Tyron Williams' injury history. And yeah, Whittington's making some noise in DeMarcus Robinson. But boy, this offense is going to run through Nacua and mainly Kupp, who I think is healthy now and in full PPR. I mean, he's two seasons removed from having the best PPR season in NFL history. He's, yes, he, normally I like players on the upside of their career, but this, you know, he's still right there if he's healthy, right toward the late stages of his prime. So give me Cooper Kupp as a top 10 fantasy wideout.
Yeah, okay. This is another one that I don't find particularly wild because I now have Nacua and Kupp relatively close in my ranks. Close enough that if you wanted to make the argument that they're the same tier, I'd buy it. In fact, if you want to make the argument that Kupp should be taken higher, I obviously buy that as well. It's not, this isn't the craziest thing that I've heard you say. I'll just say that because two things. Number one, if I'm not saying you should operate this way, but if you do want to gauge a player's future likelihood of injury based on their recent history, you are right to point out that Puka Nacua has had plenty of injuries throughout his collegiate career, right? Like, this is not a guy with like a completely clean medical file. And number two, Cooper Kupp had the greatest single receiving season in fantasy history. Like, that's a pretty good thing to have on your resume, right? Like, I don't know, maybe the Zoomers don't remember, but in 2021 Cooper Kupp was pretty damn good. And that's, you know, like, once a player has demonstrated that kind of potential, and he's not aged out of the position, as you say. He's probably on the back nine, but he is certainly not aged out of the position. That is, I mean, I'm not predicting a 1900 yard season, but it has happened for this guy with this quarterback. So we can't completely eliminate the possibility of it. I think it's perfectly reasonable. How are you feeling? Okay. Since I don't know where you are on Nacua exactly, but you know, you've got Kupp as a potential top 10 fantasy receiver. You've probably got Nacua inside your top 20. Recognizing that Matt Stafford is the exact opposite of a Konami code quarterback, right? He's gonna run for like 35 yards this year. But he does still have the potential. Like, I don't know, I'd put him on the list of guys who have the potential to pass for 5,000 yards. Where do you have him in your ranks?
Yeah, so I have a big top 13 in my quarterbacks and then a tier. You could do Tua, Goff, Lawrence, Cousins, Stafford, Herbert. I like Geno Smith, Rodgers, Watson. To me, that's just a big tier that it's all similar. So I would have Stafford as high as 14 and as low as 20 or whatever. You're just dealing with age and injury, kind of why he's a little bit lower. But the Rams had the most yards per play in the NFL last year when they were healthy, when the Kua, and that wasn't even Kupp healthy, Kyren Williams, and their offensive line is sneaky good. So yes, Stafford, when healthy, could perform as a top 12 fantasy QB even without the running. So Cooper Kupp, I'm looking at, he's the wide receiver 18 in expert consensus ranks and half PPR, my wide receiver 9. So that is mildly hot, but it would have looked hotter if you talked to me 6 weeks ago, because this was my stance six weeks ago. I had him rig this high. Nacua, by the way, is my wide receiver 10 right behind. But where I find it really interesting this year is if you get a late first round pick, early second round, I don't like at all, because if I'm out on, you know, Barkley, Gibbs, and if I like Achan more than them, right, and I like Kupp, and I like Kupp more than Nacua, Alave, London, Adams, and you know, these guys, I'm reaching with my early second round pick, quote unquote reaching, because so that's why I really want a top 8 pick this year. Not only do I like my first round pick better, I'm taking the same exact person I'm taking in the second round if I had a late first round pick, because I'm taking above ADP so much. So yeah, that's why I'm sitting actually, with Kupp. Like, I honestly will consider him at, you know, 1-2 turn.
I hear you on that, and for different reasons, but I've got, you know, again, I do not intend to go hot take for hot take with you on this show, but I do happen to have Isaiah Pacheco ranked as a potential first rounder, and like, I'll take him without blinking at the start of the second round, and that is just not where he goes, right? Like, if I had any discipline whatsoever, I could try to wait for the third round, but I can't do it. I like him too much. Okay, give me hot take number 5. Make it a little hotter.
Well, I don't know if you're going to say, if you're going to poo-poo this one as well, but it's going against Laporta. But for the past couple of months, I've had Trey McBride as my number one fantasy tight end. He's typically available 2 to 3 rounds after both Laporta and Kelsey. And I think he's the best bet to finish with, given Kelsey's age, Laporta's regression from the touchdown department. And just looking at the player last year, McBride was better yards per route run, targets per route run, led all tight ends in first downs per route run last season, which is the best stat at predicting future fantasy success. You look at, so McBride commanded a 29% target share after finally becoming a starter week 8. He recorded a 20+ target share in 12 straight games after that, a Mark Laporta reach, just six games all season. So give me this offense. It was top 10 in the second half, you know, after Murray recovering from that ACL. They added Marvin Harrison Jr. Yes, that'll take away some targets, no doubt. But this offense is going to be fun. I mean, getting away from Cliff Kingsbury is a big deal. We're going to talk about that later. I mean, there's some concerns there with his offensive structure. And we saw Murray improve last year, and he's only going to be better now removed from the knee surgery. So give me McBride as my top fantasy tight end. And I mean, all things considered equal. And you can even get him a couple rounds later to boot.
I just want to say that this can happen. Like, we don't have to, you know, we don't have to drag Kelce and Laporta down in order for this to happen. Okay. You don't need to go into a diatribe on my guy, Sam Laporta, who, by the way, saw like 120 targets last year. And if we think that the Jameson Williams phenomenon is gonna detract from that in a really significant way, I mean, that's crazy to me. Like, I don't really see a world in which a healthy Sam Laporta does not see 110 targets. It worked really well. And where he operates is a perfect fit for Jared Goff. So like, I don't think Sam Laporta gives up a ton. But I do agree with you that McBride is very much in the conversation with all of the players. And I feel like I've made the argument for Dalton Kincaid a couple times within the last week. Like, there's a group where if you told me that one of them was going to finish as the tight end one overall, and it wasn't going to be Laporta and it wasn't going to be Kelce, like that doesn't shock me. And I don't think we need, you know, sometimes in the recent past at the tight end position, like where there's a clear number one and it's Gronk or it's Gonzalez or Gates or whoever, somebody has a really noisy touchdown season and they end up finishing as the tight end one. But I think there's guys like Kincaid and McBride who can do it just on receiving volume. So this is also not a nutty take. It's not, you know, I'm not banking on it, but I would also, like, I'm thinking of my own fantasy portfolio, one of my favorite leagues. I have McBride for a dollar, and I would love to see this happen. So I'm not against it, Dalton. I'm not against it. Give me hot take number six.
I'm going to skip this one, but I was just going to lean on that and just say the Cardinals are an offense that wins fantasy leagues this year. But we already talked about Kyler Murray. The brief one, I have James Conner as a top 15 back this year too. I like him. So I think Arizona is going to. But I want to save one. So this is the penultimate. Two more to go. Because I thought of a last one we need to end on with you. So I'm going to say Kenneth Walker smashes and finishes as a top 10 fantasy RB, even ahead of your guy Pacheco, who, by the way, had never reached 170 carries before setting a career high.
This is
over 205.
This is our first battery from Dalton.
Let's go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Pacheco never even had 200 carries before last year. He set a career high 205. I'll take him over Travis Etienne. Maybe there too. Etienne wore down badly last year. Tank Bigsby's emerging. He's a thing. Ryan Grubb's going to use a ton more motion in Seattle. There's going to be far more plays. They were just super bad luck in this crazy third downs, both on offense and defense last year. The preseason, I'm buying the hype. Kenneth Walker's catching more balls. His success rate. He's boomer bust runner, but the dude is good. The Seattle's offensive line is going to be much better. This is going to be a bunch of high scoring games in this NFC West this year. And I'm buying the Seattle offense. JSN's going to emerge. There's some Metcalf, Lockett, and Geno Smith quietly really good last year. I know his fantasy stats took a step back, but still a good player. I think offense is going to be good. I think Kenneth Walker is going to smash top 10. I'll draft him as a top 10 fantasy RB. He may finish higher.
I'm really interested in the Ryan Grubb offense. I've talked about that a few times, mostly for DK Metcalf purposes and Geno Smith purposes, but I am pretty interested in the increased pass volume here. You mentioned Kenneth Walker as a boomer bust runner, which has really been, I don't know, like there's not a lot of criticism of him. And I wouldn't put him in the absolute upper echelon of NFL rushers. And I think one of the things that holds him back is the sort of big play hunting that he does. Right. And I can imagine that frustrating his coaches at times. Right. Like just get what we drew up instead of looking to turn everything into a 65 yard touchdown. No concerns about Charbonnet? You think they're that far apart, or you think the offense can be so good that it accommodates both of them?
So this is a risk, is it like a new staff, you know, ties to Walker, but I'm buying the rhetoric coming out of this all throughout camp, and it's been canine hype. You look at the nerd stats as a receiver, Charbonnet, yards per route run, 0.85. Kenneth Walker, 1.52, twice as good yards per route run, yards per reception. He's quietly a better receiver, I think, too. So, no, I think Charbonnet is an okay player, nice backup running back to get his insurance, but No, I don't think he's going to really effectively, you know, take any meaningful touches, and Walker will get the red zone one. So I'm in on K-9.
And what has you feeling better about their offensive line?
They did make some moves. They did make some moves throughout, and they're getting healthier. I've looked at the Brandon Thorne's established the run guy. He had him as an improved line this year. So I look at other people who know more than me, and I do believe there's some confidence that it cannot be, certainly can't be worse than last year. And it was a real problem last year. So I think they addressed it, and new coaching and all that. I believe it'll be an improvement.
Okay, it took us a little while here, but I think we have found like a legitimately insane take from you. I think there's two tiers of difference between Isaiah Pacheco and Kenneth Walker.
Good. I'm glad we did that. And I waited for the last one here too, Andy. Every time we look at our neighbors' ranks, it's just you still have neighbors ranked as like this is less to do with me and more to do with you. I'm just I have neighbors, you know, ranked as a top 15. fantasy wide receiver in this year.
Crazy stuff.
And you, I don't know, last I checked, didn't have him as a top 30 fantasy wide receiver. So defend yourself here.
No, I don't think I'm the one who needs to defend himself. I mean, his starting quarterback is Daniel Jones, who's never produced an 800-yard receiver. I'm willing to admit that he's never had a guy like Malik Nabers. I think the world of Malik Nabers' talent. Again, Daniel Jones has never produced an 800-yard receiver. He has looked not like aesthetically, he looks great. The beard is working for him. But he ain't looking good in the preseason. He doesn't look like a fundamentally different Daniel Jones. And then plan B is Drew Locke, who's a party. But I don't think Drew Locke is the guy that we want steering an elite offense. So those are my concerns. I think I have neighbors right now in like the mid 20s at receiver. I only have I've done a zillion drafts, and I've done a bunch of mock drafts where, you know, who even cares who you take? And I almost never take neighbors. I think I've got him like once or twice this cycle. It's just not one of those. It's not one of those offenses that I gravitate toward. I'm not, you know, so one of the areas where I feel like a fraud is I feel like sometimes I've even talked up Devin Singletary as like an offseason winner, but I never take Devin Singletary either. I'm not going out of my way to get shares of the Giants offense. It could end up a mistake with neighbors. I would just be like, there's so many other rookie receivers that I sort of secretly like as much as I like neighbors. I love Brian Thomas. And I'm much more likely entering any draft to end up with Brian Thomas than I am Malik Nabers. I don't think Nabers belongs in a week one conversation, like an opening of the season sort of conversation with Marvin Harrison Jr. I can imagine a world. I feel like you and I should be in agreement on this. I can imagine a world where Rome Odunze is immediately the Bears' best receiver. I just can't get to a significant touchdown total with neighbors. And again, the next time we see Daniel Jones really feed a number one wide receiver is going to be the first time.
Hey, I have a Dunze over Keenan Allen. I love Xavier Worthy. I love Brian Thomas. I'm in on these rookie wide receivers. But Nabers is going 50 picks later than Harrison Jr. in Yahoo leagues.
He should probably go 50 picks later than Harrison Jr. that doesn't seem crazy to me.
He matched him, if not better, in college as a being a year younger. Diggs averaged 165 targets with Dable in Buffalo. Daniel Jones was about a league average success rate with Dable. I get it could be a problem, and the interception looked ugly in the preseason, but I think Jones can be capable. I'm not sure if he gets injured again, what would happen there with Drew Locke, but I think Nabers, a special player, is going to walk into 160 targets this year. Touchdowns could be a problem. But yeah, this will be a fun one to follow, because the preseason hype now is going to raise his ADP. So I'm back, you know, I mean, it just depends on what league you're in. Some leagues will go in round two, others will go, you know, much later. So I just had to bring him up because I always noticed throughout summer, you were notably lower on him than some of us.
I can imagine. I think maybe the most likely scenario for Malik Nabers is a season that looks like what we've gotten out of Garrett Wilson each of the last 2 years.
Ooh,
like we could get to the end of the year and be like, man, that was heroic. I can't believe that guy gave me 1,000 yards, 1,100 yards. That was sensational. And each of his three touchdowns was a gem.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I'm banking on Daniel Jones being better than the Zach Wilson of the league, but I could be wrong. And he could get hurt again. So yeah, could be. There's just no one else there in New York, but the same could be said with Garrett Wilson. So yeah. Totally. All right, that's fair.
All right, I love that you finished with a couple of takes that I can't even wrap my head around. I think that's great. Good work by you. Not that I expected anything less. We're going to take another break here. After this break, we're going to dive into a special segment and then get to your mailbag questions. All right, we are back. Let's toss it to our keys to winning, presented by Toyota, official automotive partner of the NFL. For the month of August, we want to help you with keys to winning your drafts. I want to talk about a big kind of buzzy news item that broke this week. It was actually one of those things that, like, technically breaking news, but I think we all knew it was happening, and I was surprised to learn that it had just been announced. Jaden Daniels named officially the QB1, the starting quarterback for the Washington Commanders. Again, we knew it was going to happen. Crazy rushing upside. Pretty talented passer as well. A lot of experience for a rookie. He's an older rookie, so he's about as good right now as he's going to get on his first contract, I think. He's surrounded by a little bit of talent, although he did just lose Jahan Dotson via trade. Dalton, what are your expectations for Jaden Daniels?
I'm high on Jaden Daniels' fantasy value as a rookie. He's my QB8. I also love Brian Robinson to break out this year. But, Andy Behrens, I have some concerns about this offense. I want you to tell me, am I being too high on Daniels after looking at preseason usage with new OC Cliff Kingsbury? There are some concerning trends. The use of motion, Commanders dead last among 32 teams. It'd be nice to note, though, Andy, that my Seahawks were second highest under Ryan Grubb, and your Falcons and Bijan Robinson second lowest. But Commanders last in motion, and they've called 19 screens in the preseason. Yeah. No other team's called more than 10. McLaurin's been lining up on one side of the field, just like Kingsbury used to do DeAndre Hopkins back in Arizona. So I do have some concerns about this offensive setup. Maybe Daniels can overcome it, a prolific college rusher. But my antenna's up looking at this usage.
Yeah, a lot of interesting points there, a lot of good points. It's hard for me to believe that the exact way that they have operated in the preseason is what they're going to carry into the regular season, except that there are some things that sync with what we've seen from Kingsbury before, right? And the idea of McLaurin as like this movable chess piece, I think, is kind of out of the window. That would at this point, it would shock me if that is actually a thing in the regular season. I very much doubt it's going to happen. I admire your rank. I'm not quite that high on Daniels, but as far as somebody who could plausibly finish among the top 10 fantasy quarterbacks, of course he can. He's got that kind of rushing upside. If you told me he was going to rush for 800 yards and 8 touchdowns, 9 touchdowns, 10 touchdowns, of course, that's definitely in the range of outcomes. He needs to stay healthy, needs to avoid some of the like cartoonishly big hits that he was susceptible to as a college player. But if he can do that, if he can just get down, if he can just play 16, 17 games, the rushing upside alone, like, he's not going to have to pass for much more than 3,600 yards in order to finish the season as a QB1. I think that's a pretty good call by you. All right. That was our key to winning, presented by Toyota. Let's get to what the folks have been waiting for. We know anyone listening to this podcast, you are likely to have your most important drafts in the next couple of weeks. If it's not this weekend, it's going to be the following weekend, and we are here to help. So welcome to the Fantasy Mailbag.
You've got mail.
When it comes, I want to whale.
Goodbye.
All right, first one here, man. You guys came through with the voice memos. Let me tell you, we have asked repeatedly for video, for voice memos, and you guys came through with it. So let's get to Anna. Anna sends in a voice memo about a Cowboys wide receiver who is not CeeDee Lamb.
Hey guys, love your show. I have a question about Brandon Cooks. Why is no one talking about him as a sleeper? Wouldn't he be the clear number two pass catcher in a high volume offense? And if by chance CeeDee Lamb doesn't play, he could go off. Am I missing something?
Perhaps a fair question from Anna. Dalton, I'll send this to you. Are we sure that in a scenario in which there was no CeeDee Lamb week one, which is just for the record, not something that I am forecasting, but in a scenario absent CeeDee Lamb, I probably don't. I'm not like all in on the Cowboys without CeeDee Lamb, right? I'm not that excited about him, but like Jake Ferguson is there. I don't know. They're not completely without other weapons. How do you feel about Brandon Cooks?
I kind of love this point. The Cowboys scored by far the most points per game last year. CeeDee Lamb is going to sit out the entire preseason. I know there's Tolbert hype, but he hasn't shown it. Ferguson's, we like him as a fantasy player because of the role. I mean, he's not a very, yeah. He's not a target earner. He's not a very good real life player. So, man, I mean, Cooks could easily emerge here at 30 years old, you know, and he's missing practice here lately. So he's not going to cost you a high draft pick. Yeah, I like Brandon Cooks as a deep sleeper, and it makes a lot of sense in that offense. No one's talking about the boring veteran and whatnot, but there's a path there for him to be a sneaky fantasy value.
Yeah, it's not the worst call. And when Brandon Cooks got going last year, he had some weeks. As soon as the Cowboys decided that they were a pass first, pass second team, they were pretty fun. He was fun. You're right about Ferguson. He was mostly a red zone / goal to go target. He wasn't a guy that you like, you know, he wasn't an automatic first down. He wasn't a guy that they were leaning terribly hard on, but he had a role that mattered a whole lot. So I basically agree with you that there's a path for Brandon Cooks. There are young players that I am more likely to take shots on than Brandon Cooks, but he is the sort of guy who can help get you, you know, a point that I like to make is that you got to try to win September. You got to try to go 2-1, 3-0 right out of the gates. And Cooks could absolutely be somebody who helps you do that.
Dallas might also have the worst running back group in the NFL. I don't hear people talking about that a lot, but Dowdle, just because he's better than Zeke in training camp doesn't mean he's good. I mean, there's some really scary underlying stats with Dowdle. And I mean, they might have the worst receiving group in the league. And if Lamb is holding out, I mean, Cooks, yes. I mean, there's a weird path for like him to suddenly be like a number one option on that on a team that scored the most points in the NFL last year.
I can't believe you did that to producer Colin. I don't even want to know what Colin is probably seething right now. He's a big Rico Dowdle guy. I am not a huge Rico Dowdle guy. I think you're right. This is a pretty ordinary running back room that probably still needs to add someone else. Can't really rule that out, but I'm with you there. Let's go to Joey, who also sends in a voice memo. Man, you guys really came through.
Has anything that's happened in the preseason changed the way that you've ranked your rookies? For instance, before the draft, I was thinking I'd probably lean towards Brian Thomas Jr. But now with Hollywood Brown potentially being out, I'm thinking I might like Xavier Worthy over him. What do you think of that or any other things that have changed during the preseason?
I'll tell you, Dalton, something I suggested earlier. I don't think it's crazy to assume that Rome Odunze has a real path to being the Bears' top receiver or like a 1A. I think the world of DJ Moore. So I'm not going to make a case that DJ Moore is going to be anything other than his usual 1100 yard, 1200 yard self. I think he's great. I think you can ask anything of him and he's really, really good. I just think that Rome Odunze has been the guy, whatever, it's preseason, very, very limited sample. But when we're in an improv situation, when things have not gone according to script for Caleb Williams, he tries to get radar lock on Rome Odunze. That has happened fairly consistently. They have had some wow moments together in the preseason. They have had some real highlights in camp. I mean, shoot, they flew to the draft on the same plane, right? Every time one of them makes an appearance somewhere in Chicago, the other one is attached to his hip. So I think there are very strong vibes there. And I think there's a non-trivial chance, you know, Odunze, another one of these guys, along with Neighbors and Harrison, that were part of this incredible group of incoming rookie receivers. He's somebody who is vaulted up the ranks. Like you, I have him a little bit ahead of Keenan Allen at this point. He's a guy that I've come up on. I've always been pretty high on Brian Thomas. And of course, we can see the path with Xavier Worthy. So take this any direction you want to go.
I'm super high on all these rookies. Xavier Worthy, my wide receiver 35, fastest player in the NFL with Patrick Mahomes, going to be using motion. Andy Reid will make it work. Odunze, yeah, I have above Keenan Allen. Caleb Williams has no ties to Allen, who's maybe overweight, maybe not. But Odunze, I'm buying the hype. He's a very good route runner. And Brian Thomas, Calvin Ridley had the 10th most expected fantasy points last year, and he's replacing him in that role and apparently really, really impressing. I mean, I maybe should move Brian Thomas above Christian Kirk even too there to keep this theme there. But yeah, I have all three rookie wide receivers as top 40 fantasy wideouts, and they may pay off even more so, you know, the second half of the year. They'll be league winners.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance that when we get to the biggest draft week of the preseason, I might have Brian Thomas inside my top 36 receivers. I just think he's a sensational talent. And people have, you know, if you've heard me on previously during Convictions Week, you know how strongly I feel that he is a perfect pairing with what Trevor Lawrence has always done well, right? Like you want to talk about somebody who is great as a vertical threat and a quarterback who has been adept at the deep ball since he came into the league. I mean, this is just a wonderful pairing. So I think Thomas has a great year as long as he stays healthy. Let's go to Matt, who, man, Matt sent in a video. We begged for this stuff. We begged for your videos. We begged for your voice memos. You guys came through. So let's see what Matt has to ask.
Hey guys, got a keeper question here. Half PPR, 4-point touchdown for quarterbacks. Do you take Olave in the 7th or Richardson in the 11th? Thanks, guys.
All right, listen, I know we have begged for your videos, for your voice memos. I appreciate that you sent in a video. Pull over to the side of the damn road. Okay. This makes me nervous. This is the dad in me, I guess. We don't need you recording your videos while you are operating a vehicle. You're a busy person. I get it. Matt, you are an example of somebody who didn't necessarily have to send in a video. I appreciate that you did, but, don't put yourself or anybody at risk to do it. Even though this is a very important question, I kind of feel like I know which way Dalton is leaning on this one.
Oh, I don't feel strongly here. These are so tough, like knowing without the context, you know, of who's going to be available at those spots. Olave goes a couple rounds earlier than Richardson. So I feel like this is a fair, you know, close either or, but yeah, give me my guy AR. I mean, give me Richardson, my number one fantasy QB that late in the draft. Olave still has questions. I mean, I have confidence Kubiak will increase his production, but he's no, like, he's one of those guys we're unsure of as a second round pick, you know, not a slam we feel great about. So I go Richardson, but there's no wrong answer here. They're both great keepers.
Yeah, listen, I think Olave is good. I think he's a very good player, very good real life player. We saw multiple instances last year in which he and Derek Carr did not have good vibes. I talked about the good vibes between Roma Dunze and Caleb Williams. That is the opposite of what we appeared to have between Carr and Olave last year. It's kind of a low upside offense. I mean, Derek Carr is generally somebody that we expect to come in around 20, 21, 22 touchdown passes. I would keep Richardson. Like, remember that, you know, if Richardson has the season that we all think he's capable of, he's gonna go in the second or third round next year. Like, that's where these guys go. That's where Josh Allen goes. That's where Mahomes, Jackson, like, they're all like top of draft guys. So if you can actually keep him in the 11th and you get you know, top of the ranks value, that's too much for me to pass up. I couldn't possibly do it. Let's go to one more here. Oh man, this one's perfect. Christopher sends in this email about Taysom Hill. One thing I know for sure, you'll call me a sicko for asking this question. What I don't know, he addressed this to Matt Harmon, will you, Matt Harmon, use your arguably immense power to right what is wrong? My question, complaint, why has Yahoo decided to make Taysom Hill eligible as QB only and not as tight end? Well, it is your lucky day, Christopher, because we have actually added tight end eligibility to Taysom Hill. I will say that Matt Harmon is not responsible for position eligibility, as much as I would love to lie and say that he was. He is not responsible for position eligibility, nor is anyone who appears on this podcast. Position eligibility originally comes from like our stats provider, and then, you know, it's our game. If we want to, we can make adjustments to it. So tight end eligibility was added to Taysom Hill. There's not a perfect position for him. I think you could argue that he should be a running back and nothing else. We've seen him lined up that way, but we've also seen him lined up used as a tight end. Maybe tight end is the kind of catch-all position that we should use in cases like this, where somebody finds their way to the backfield and they're the wildcat quarterback and they're sometimes a receiver. I don't know. He's Taysom Hill. He's unique. If we do come to a point in the season, and this isn't guaranteed by any means, but if we did come to a point in the season where Taysom Hill was actually had to be used as the quarterback, this would be a crazy cheat code. Because one thing I will tell you is, once we add eligibility to a player in season, we do not take it away.
I could see him being used as a running back or fullback a lot more this year with their alternatives in New Orleans, but the way he's been used in the preseason. So Hill is my tight end 13. I think there's a clear cut top 12, but I could see you argue, you know, versus Dallas Goedert right there too. And then it's a total crapshoot afterward there with guys like Freiermuth and Schultz, you know, maybe seeing less work as a first team as expected too. So he's absolutely in the fantasy radar now as a tight end eligible in Yahoo. Taysom Hill, it's you're right, it's tricky, but we made him tight end eligible and everyone should treat him accordingly and draft him as a top 15 guy.
Yeah, let me ask you about that a little bit, because I love getting into your thought process on rankings. I have hated ranking Taysom Hill as a tight end because he's one of those guys where, like, I know I'm getting two games a year. Maybe there's a third game in there where Taysom Hill just goes nuclear, right? And it's two touchdowns and maybe throws for one. He only gets five touches, but, like, you know, whatever, he finishes with 20 plus fantasy points. And then he's so quiet in the other weeks. So he's among boom bust players, he is an unusual category of boom bust player. But maybe it won't be like that this year. Maybe there's a rushing role for him that is a little bit more consistent. I don't know. Do you view him as basically fundamentally the same guy that he was last year? Or do you think we're going to see a handful of additional carries?
No, I do not view him as the same. I've been traditionally, like you, ranking him around 18, 19, 20 and hating to rank him. This year, I feel it's a little different. I'm excited after that group. I want him among that tier. I want to go after him. I think it could be different with his usage, but of course, I could be wrong and it could be the same old. But to me, it feels a little different and worth going after, especially, again, that tier from 13 to 30 at tight end to me is a total crapshoot. So go after, and I like Taysom as much, if not more, or more than all of them. So that's where I stand with him. But I hear you. It is frustrating guy to rank historically.
Yeah, of course, the upside to Taysom is that he could win you a matchup in any given week, right? And I will not say the same of the tight ends that we have in the ranks from like tight end 15 on. I wouldn't classify those guys as players who can just single-handedly win you a matchup. And Taysom is definitely one of those guys. All right, just a reminder, the Fantasy Mailbag is open for business for the rest of August. Be sure to send in your voice memos and videos. Do not be operating a motor vehicle while you send in these videos. I appreciate you, Matt, but that was above and beyond the call and certainly unnecessary and certainly not recommended. Don't do that. Don't be like Matt. But please, you know, from a standing or seated position, not operating a vehicle, feel free to send in a video. Do it to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Our goal, again, to get to as many of your questions as we possibly can. Also, a reminder, week one is about 2 weeks away. And as you all know from the countless live reads around here, we got a little thing going with NBC Sports this year. If you sign up for a fantasy league on Yahoo Fantasy, you will automatically be entered to win $1 million. If any of the players you start score a touchdown in the week one games on NBC and Peacock, you'll earn bonus entries into the sweepstakes. The deadline is September 5. That is going to do it for us today and for Convictions Week. Again, what a way to take out Convictions Week. What a way to conclude than, you know, I can think of no better way than with Dalton Del Don bringing the scorching hot takes, which he certainly did. Thanks for tuning into the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, official automotive partner of the NFL. On Monday, Dan Titus and Tara Roberts host our last Mock Draft Monday of the season before we kick off Cram Week on the pod. Till then, we are out.